What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the FN Studios. This is Five Rounds Today. I'm John Ramdean. He is Robin Black. And man, oh man, is there a lot of stuff to talk about. Of course, we're looking ahead to UFC on Fox, which returns, which goes down in British Columbia, the return to Vancouver, a sensational main event, Carlos Condit and Damian Maia. Oh, man, I can't wait to watch that. The debut at 145 pounds for the former UFC lightweight champion, Anthony Pettis, as he has a tough assignment in Charles Oliveira. Our buddy Alex Ricci making his UFC debut. Chad Laprise on the card.
Shane
Campbell on the card. Bunch of exciting Canadians. But, of course, we got to talk about what happened this past Saturday night at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. UFC 202, of course, the main event between Conor McGregor and Nathan Diaz, the highly anticipated rematch. And when you saw what happened over the course of five rounds, did it play out exactly the way you thought it would play out? Because I hoped, in my mind, I thought, okay, this is the way it's going to play out based on Conor's skill, his mindset, what we saw from the first fight, what we know of Nathan Diaz, based on their fighting styles. It kind of played out perfectly because you saw what Conor's capable of. You saw Nathan Diaz's durability and his no quit. You got to see the movement and the peaks and valleys for each guy. I thought it was so sensational. Yeah. It really reminded me of when Pride in the UFC were going head to head, and they teased that fight between Chuck Liddell and Vanderlei Silva, the two big stars at the time. What would happen if these guys fought? Vanderlei Silva signs with the UFC. They make this fight, and it's like there's no way that this fight will ever be able to live up to the hype and live up to the expectations that we, as fight fans, built it up in our mind. And sure as shit, it just delivered fireworks. And it was really a perfect scenario, the way that that fight ended, just like the way this fight, the main event, ended. Because, A, history is made. These guys really don't have to fight again. They could go their separate ways. They both elevated their status. They made a shitload of money. And as a fight fan, if they were to just go, never face each other again and be like, oh, that was one of those cool moments in history. Of course, the third fight would be absolutely monstrous, and I wouldn't be surprised to see it again. But you also had some controversy because the one judge gave it a draw. Of course, the Diaz supporters, they're like, there's no way Diaz won that fight for sure. What did you take away from UFC 202?
There was so much. Yeah. There was absolutely so much. So often, we will look and we want to find out all the truths. Okay, what happened? Why did it happen? How did this get set up? What changed there? You know, what was the push and the pull and the ebb and the flow?
Yeah.
And we want to get into all of that. And sometimes we'll be like, oh, if only people could see some of this magic, more people would love fighting. And I want to do that. And we've been doing that and people have been doing that. But this almost doesn't need it, you know, because you don't have to know anything to watch that. You don't have to have ever even watched a fight before. You don't even have to know who these guys are.
You don't
have to know anything. You just have to watch that, and your mind will be blown.
Do you feel that the build up to this that would have added for fans that necessarily didn't tune into fights? That's not normally their thing. Because I know if you're a fan of some sort of action sports, whether it's dirt biking
or movies,
stuff like that, you see that fight, like you said, it's very easy to understand. But is it enhanced if you add the build up to it?
Not for me.
Not for you.
If anything, I was just so happy after that fight and the next day, and even we're a half a week later now, and it's just that's why you're watching this.
Yeah.
There was technical brilliance, there was strategic brilliance, there was physiological amazing things, but you know, all of those things, but there was heart for the most of all.
Yeah.
And that's the part that we just feel. We don't have to talk about leg kick strategies. We don't have to talk about range management. We have to talk about energy systems and how you use them. I want to talk about all those things.
Of course.
But even without talking about those things, and this made me question a lot of things, I'm always like, people will come out of a fight and say, you know, that was a lackluster card. And I'm like, how can you say that? But I realize when you put it against this or Condit and Lawler or Robbie and Lawler or some of these really big ones, I understand that when there's this sort of low-hanging fruit, emotional fruit and power and swing and push and pull, there's also I just saw beauty. I just saw brilliance and incredible skill and talent and heart from two people. And I always – I tend to cheer for McGregor because I find him very curious, and I see him – and I'm not going to compare him to Bruce Lee. But in the way – the things – the way Bruce Lee viewed martial arts was this long evolving search for further evolution. What is it? We don't know everything about fighting. He didn't know everything about fighting. He knew more than we do, and he knew more than everybody. We're all just catching up, really.
Without real application. Yeah, that's exactly. The craziest part about it.
Yeah. We can study thousands of fights. He didn't have any to study. That's crazy. But McGregor is not Bruce Lee, and neither is Carlos Condit, and neither is Damian Maya, and neither is Pettis. But many of them have that philosophy.
Straight Blast Gym. Yeah. That's Bruce Lee's thing, and that's where Conor McGregor comes from. Clearly, the philosophy is there, and the goal is to try to attain perfection and the economy of movement and so on and so forth. It's a and that's the thing that Bruce Lee even said. He goes, "I hate that we have to name this stuff."
Yeah, right.
Because like it's everything is constantly changing.
The further we get along in studying fighting, the more I hate these limiting terms. Yeah. We talked about that last week going into it. Is, you know, if you say something is takedown defense, that now you've just given it's great that you can people can go, "Oh, his takedown defense was great." But it gives them something to a touchstone to work with, but you're also you're misnaming things. Cardio, we name cardio. We'll probably talk about that further in here, how that played out in the fight. It's not cardiovascular. It's three energy systems, ATP, CP, which is the instant creation of energy, then anaerobic, which is burning of sugars, glycogen, which creates a certain kind of energy. And then only if you manage your energy a particular way is it actually aerobic at all with the use of oxygen. And how those move is what we're going, he's gassed or cardio or any of those things. So when we limit them with these simpler terms, it's great for the entertainment purpose. Mm-hmm. But if we want to go beyond that, we need to open them back up. That's not just his takedown. He's great at defending the single. If it wasn't even a single, it wasn't for the purpose of
takedown.
Frankie Edgar, we broke him down a couple of years back and against Sean Sherk or you know any of those fights after, his takedown scores went down to 10% from 60%. He wasn't trying to take anyone down. He was trying to get you to react so he could hit you. So if you don't understand that stuff, anyways, I'm meandering around, but
it's important because people have to. I think the way that it will grow is by introducing concepts and reintroducing concepts so that people can say, oh, okay, you can put the pieces of the puzzle together to now get a better understanding of the full picture.
I think so where I was going with Conor was about him and his coach's desire for evolution and to keep evolving, growing, understanding that when they die, 1,000 years in the future, they'll be very rudimentary fighters.
Yeah, right.
So that's really cool. That's why I always like – but then Diaz is this raw material, like this real, true, visceral, like who he is and what he is and what his brother is, what they are – is so unique and special. So they're different. McGregor will say he doesn't have any special skills except for hard work and obsession. And Diaz is all raw, beautiful raw materials like fearlessness, courage, alpha. But he's also smart and he's also a real martial artist who's built it around that. So this fight unfolded like this is what this thing is. It's almost – it's going to be near impossible to beat. It beat me last time. Yeah. Just the raw material of the genius of Diaz defeated us last time. We study it and we come up with a strategy of how to go back and beat it and understanding that it'll change. I went back and watched last week's show. We were talking about leg kicks going to happen, but they better not think that Diaz can't check them because if they do, they'll be in trouble. You could end up with an injury.
Yeah.
And he did. Yeah. Diaz – I will. I think Kavanaugh is going to come on with me and Mullins at some point in the next week. I want to ask him, did you underestimate Diaz's leg kicks? Because that injury to that leg, just a little more. Maybe it breaks. Maybe you can't walk on it. Maybe you lose the fight because Diaz did check kicks. If you thought he wasn't going to, when we touched on it last week, if you think McGregor isn't throwing leg kicks, you're in trouble. But if McGregor thinks this guy won't check leg kicks, if his team thinks that, they're in trouble.
You would imagine, though, that the goal is, okay, yes, we're going to throw leg kicks, but he knows we're probably going to throw leg kicks because if you look where a lot of fighters have had success against Nathan Diaz, it is in that realm. Again, you're always trying to, as a martial artist, as you pointed out, the goal is to evolve. John Kavanaugh and Conor McGregor have talked about the evolution of their game and what their goals are. So you had to expect that it was going to come, but at the same time, you mentioned you probably also have to expect that Nathan Diaz will eventually start
100%.
Checking them.
100%. And I'm sure we'll talk about this more, but we talked about this last week. Fans are now watching fighting, and they have so many questions, and none of them are what's next, or very few of them are, what's next for this guy, and where does this mean to the division? That's old. That's gone.
Yeah.
Now everything on Twitter, everything popping up, what about his energy? What about these leg kicks? What does it matter when he gets cut? Everybody's asking about it. And there are people who, all the fighters sitting at the desk on Fox, they used to have to go talk about that nonsense. Now they're talking about fighting. So the understanding is growing. But an absolute key is whenever anybody makes statements and says this is this, they're lying or they're wrong or they're going to be wrong soon. Because this isn't this. You have to anticipate. Where is it going? Yeah. Where is it changing? You know, we talked to Mike Brown in Ottawa, and we talked to him about you're teaching a curriculum, but while you've developed this curriculum to teach these fighters, somebody else is changing. Somebody else is evolving. So their curriculum has to be fluid. It has to change constantly. There are things we see week to week now. We don't even get the chance to point them all out with our 40 hours a week of talk because there's so many. Mm-hmm. Things that didn't exist 3 weeks ago, the way people work a certain position or the way they help, it's changing. It changes every month now.
Yeah.
That's so cool. And if anyone thought Diaz wouldn't, they were crazy to think that. And if Kavanaugh thought, and I don't think he did, but that one check, and I was sitting in my living room with a few friends, and I'm like, that's a bad one.
Yeah.
We saw it, and you felt it, and it turned out, and it caught right there. And it turned out it was. It didn't make him lose the fight, but it altered that fight.
Now, a question would be, because we know how tough it is, sometimes the fighters will rely on certain physical attributes to get them through a fight because things aren't the same. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to ask about strategy and about the leg kicks and if certain things were intentional. Don't go anywhere. We're going to come back on Five Rounds Today. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ram, Dean, and Black with you. We're discussing UFC 202. Before the break, we're talking about leg kicks in the main event. Conor McGregor utilizing them against Nathan Diaz, despite the fact that we hadn't seen him use them in his previous fights in the UFC. Nathan Diaz didn't initially start checking the leg kicks. My question to you is, would a fighter be willing to sacrifice their body to introduce the idea that I am not going to check these leg kicks? You're slamming them into my leg until it's time for me to check them.
Yeah, 100%.
And try to hurt you while I'm checking it. Because you put the message out there, I'm going to let you get comfortable doing this.
Yeah.
It's not going to be ideal, but hey, look, you're faster than me. You're more athletic than me.
I'm going to time one.
I'm going to time one.
Yeah, 100%. And that those types of strategies are the things that are very hard to put into a four-minute breakdown, but they're so interesting. Restraint.
Yeah.
Restraint. You want to check that first leg kick,
but
if you do, he might be more careful.
That's
he understands they're in there. He'll understand, you know, only he'll do it while your weight is in a certain thing. Let him do it, let him do it, let him do it, let him do it, nail him for it. 100%. Not only is that the kind of thing a good fighter will do, that's the kind of thing a tough fighter will do.
Yeah.
A Diaz. Now, there are these things, we were just saying it before the break, there are these things that we act like are true or facts or permanent. And 6 or 7 years ago, when did Nick fight Condit? 7 years ago.
Yeah,
I think it was 2009. And we were at the old office, and we went to that place where we work out, and they had the one camera, and you said, I think Diaz is going to do this, this, and this. What do you think? And I said, I think Condit's going to move towards that side and kick that leg outside. I don't know if it's still on the internet, but I remember that was the first time where I was like, wow. Through work and study and looking at stuff, you were able to anticipate one possible result because he also could have got knocked out right away or choked out right away. These predictions, if anybody goes and says, look what I said, all you can do is create an informed idea. But it was one of the first ones where I was like, wow, I said for 25 minutes he's going to kick that leg and circle away from the left hand, and that's what he did. And it was crazy, and I was all blown away. And the reason that was thought was because – that what that at the time everyone was like, oh, he's a volume puncher. Which sometimes you can trace some of these terms. That one's a Jimmy Smith.
Okay.
I think that one's a Jimmy
Smith.
Okay. Because and once they come out, they exist forever as if it's the only words that we have. I don't know why that is. Language is supposed to evolve as everything does. And yet this guy's a volume puncher. He's got better accuracy. His takedown defense. These are not permanent categories.
Sure.
They're constructs that we make for the to make it easy to understand and to entertain. I get that simplifying it is good. But it's not permanent. If people want to say, you know, accuracy, durability, you know, volume of punches, any of these things, in-fighter, out-fighter, whatever terms people want to use, even distance management.
Yeah.
I started talking about that. I didn't think that would be – and everybody's talked about that. But you don't think you're going to use it forever.
Yeah.
It's a term used
for
a little while. But so these things – and then people start – if they have a fixed mindset – for the world, they think that what you see is forever. So anyways, Diaz back then, we identified because he was a Jimmy Smith volume puncher, and he would do it. What was the key to it? He was heavy on his front legs, so he leaned forward. He had his chin out a little further. He had his chest out a little further, and he just put a swarm up.
Yeah.
That swarm backed you up so he could lean on his front leg and move forward. Right. It's very simple, but it was beautiful. Once people started kicking that leg, those guys' options are, well, I guess I'm screwed. I guess I'm screwed. These guys all know I'm heavy on the front leg, like all these guys are indicating. Yeah. I guess I'm done. Or a guy with a growth mindset goes, well, when I do lean back, and for the purpose of checking kicks, there will be points in the fight I cannot just do what I was doing. Now, if you don't kick my leg, I'm going old school. I've been doing that for a lifetime. I'm going to do it to you. But if you do, sadly, it's going to change my everything about the game. But Nick and Nate Diaz are highly intelligent martial artists, so they go, well, either I have to change everything about my game, so at certain times I'm more evenly
playing
distributed
this game,
for the purpose of stopping your leg kick. Maybe I can hurt you, which is what Diaz did, and I love your thinking that take one, mm-hmm. finally time the good one when you just start getting all willy-nilly. And more aggressive.
I'll just throw them,
Only good things happen
when
I throw
them.
So he starts to do that. But they change their game. So later, I saw 3 weeks ago, well, Diaz is heavy on the front foot. Dude, that's a 6 years ago analysis. These are not permanent things. These are and the great thing about this is, like we were saying earlier, fighting can be very inspirational and very educational. And if you look and go, well, I thought Diaz was forever heavy on his front leg. Turns out sometimes he distributes back. He built an entire game around that. He checks kicks sometimes. He moves differently. It made him better through self-examination and self-improvement and restructuring. Hey, wait a second. Maybe I could get better at playing piano. Maybe I could get better at my job. Maybe I could be a better husband.
Yeah.
We can all do that. That's what a growth mindset is. And if you have a fixed mindset, well, this is how – I know I'm this tall, but that very few other things are going to be the same.
Yes, right.
I'm going to gain and lose weight.
Sure.
I'm going to get smarter or dumber. if I stop doing something I'm good at – It will fatigue and atrophy. If I work hard on something, it'll get better. So why would we think when we say, oh, this guy is left hook reliant? That was 8 months ago.
Right.
You have no idea what he's been doing since then. So that's what Kavanaugh's win or learn concept is. And they – I don't know if they applied it to Nate Diaz, but they should have. Because if that leg was broken, Diaz, he falls down. Diaz goes like this. I'm not surprised, motherfuckers. And that's the end of that, and he won too. So that's an interesting – but there are a million tiny, fascinating moments in that fight. We could watch it – I watched it 8 times, 7 times, 9 times. I don't know. From different perspectives. His perspective, his perspective, his coach's perspective, his coach's perspective. Only – feeling the energy shifts, only feeling the distance shifts. And it's fascinating no matter what perspective you watch it from.
Yeah, I think – and that's – you know, we're talking about why people tune in to mixed martial arts or combat sports. It's kind of – what we saw in the main event was the full package. You really got to see everything that a fight fan or an action fan was looking for. And I include the buildup to it because, hey, there's a backstory.
Yeah.
And many times we've seen that the backstory, that the lead up just the product cannot deliver because it's been built up to
Ellenberger
such a degree.
Ellenberger versus Rory is always the one I pull out.
Yeah.
Because Ellenberger, both McGregor and Diaz are authentic. That's who they are.
Yep.
When you take – now, maybe Nate Diaz did at times before – the authentic Nate Diaz from 5 years ago. Remember when we used to interview him?
Oh, yeah.
He was very quiet.
Yeah, he was.
He didn't have a lot to say, but he
felt, I'll tell you the reason why. I'll tell you a quick little story. So Nick and Nathan Diaz, they were doing a seminar here in Toronto. So I went to go cover the seminar. And it's like they want – they every time I was interviewing, they're both together.
Yeah.
Like they wanted to be interviewed. It's like, no, I kind of want you separately. So it's like, okay, Nathan, I'm going to talk to Nick first, if you can just move. A-Rob's giving us the signal. So quickly, I tell Nate, I said, you have to get out of the shot because I'm going to interview Nick first. He goes, oh, normally people just ask us things together, and Nick always answers for both of us, so I just don't say anything. So it's like, oh, he goes, I can't believe you actually just want to hear from me alone, because normally everybody wants to hear from Nick. So now that Nathan has his – and I say Nathan,
that's
pointed out,
his
because
name is.
Nick called him Nathan the entire time we were there. So.
And he calls himself Nathan.
Yeah.
Everybody
his,
he knows.
His team calls him Nathan.
It's the same thing with cardio is the wrong word. Nate is wrong.
Yeah.
Nobody calls him that, but it became his name in fighting. Even though it's not his name, it's not a name he or anyone around him uses.
Yeah, it's funny. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're talking more about UFC 202 and the UFC's return to Vancouver. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Ramdean and Black chatting about UFC 202. Of course, the main event, Conor McGregor and Nathan Diaz, and sensational work by both guys. And the way it ended, I know it's not the way that Nathan Diaz or his team wanted it to end, but it was kind of perfect because you really, for a lot of these fighters, they look at, okay, how do I make the biggest paydays possible? Well, you just set up the biggest payday. Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw the lead up, if there's an event, a third fight, and you would imagine if you're the UFC, and Nathan Diaz even said it afterwards. Exactly, it could be a year. Nathan Diaz even said it himself. He goes, "I'm not coming back till I get the third fight."
Good
for
you.
Exactly. Do what you want. And you just made a big chunk of change.
Twice.
You don't have to come back in 4 months. You don't have to come back in 8 months. You could come back in a year's time. Just spend the year enjoying and training and evolving. Yeah. And when it's time to sign on the dotted line, the zero. Those are in abundance there. So good for you, Nathan Diaz. Good for you, Conor McGregor. But when you look at we come out of this fight, a little bit of controversy. Nathan Diaz supporters think that he won. Conor, I mean, I look at it objectively from – I know because there's always – there's
you're
scores.
You're literally a fan of both, but possibly Diaz a little more than McGregor.
I think so. But I have Irish roots, so I always root for the Irish guy.
But Diaz probably a little more.
They've been my guys for a long time. So when you look at – objectively, when you look at, okay – when they're about to announce who won, I know you're supposed to score it round by round, but I look at it as, okay, if you're a fighter, who would you rather be? Look at Nathan Diaz and look at Conor McGregor. Nathan Diaz had the shit kicked out of him. He was smashed in the face. Yeah. He was smashed in the legs. He was smashed in the body. Yeah, Conor got hit too, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because, again, we were talking about it earlier, and I can honestly – but I'm also such a fan of both. I admire these guys so much. But I honestly, if it went either way, this time in particular, it was just such a great fight.
Yeah.
I really wouldn't care. And I really wouldn't – I don't even understand the debate. But it's centered. So fighting draws you in for all these reasons.
My heart was racing for all five rounds.
The whole time. Yeah.
I was like – my hands were like
–
the white knuckled. I just couldn't believe what I was watching.
And so – I was looking at it from just how amazing it was. And that's for both guys.
Yeah.
You'd want to win, but by all accounts, Diaz was giddy after.
Yeah.
He was literally giddy and proud. And he might have said, yo, I won that fight. That's his thing.
Sure.
You know? But he was proud. He knows what he did.
Yeah.
He knows what it was. The millions aren't different one way or the other. This guy's hand is raised or my hand is raised. He honestly, I don't think, cares.
Right.
As long as he fought his brains out and his heart out. And that's what he did. So there's that. But that idea, you know, you're a Protestant and I'm a Catholic. I don't think we're either of those things. But if we are, well, that's it. I am for life and you're my enemy.
Yeah.
If you are from the north and I'm from the south, that's it.
Yeah.
We're enemies for life. If you're a conservative, a Republican, and a Democrat, no, We're winning. That's a very black or white thing, a binary culture. Sure. That's heavy right now. That's our world that we live in is very much that way. And as much as if you really think about it, you will admire somebody for changing their mind, being flexible, seeing another side. We don't do that a lot, really. We defend the thing to the end. So three judges that we've hired said it went this way. Now, Diaz is whatever, man. I thought I won, but man, that was an amazing fight. I'm so proud of it. But the Diaz supporters will be like, well, that could have been a 10-8 round. Well, that he ran. Or, you know, I thought he won that.
Diaz supporters seem to swing. I was at a funeral yesterday. Rest in peace to my Uncle Bill. There's a number of fight fans there. And they're like, Diaz was robbed, man. Yeah. It was bullshit. And I'm like, what, really?
Yeah,
you really think that he was robbed in that fight?
Yeah. What's interesting, passion is good. And it's weird, though. Passion and conflict drives almost everything. It's driving everything. That's why I was like, I just couldn't stand seeing these guys lobbing bottles at each other and throwing a can into a crowd and freaking out. Because eventually that just takes over itself. Like, what is a Kardashian? What does she do?
Yeah. I have no clue.
Just throw bottles and cans. Yeah, her version of it. She's actually not an artist or a singer or an athlete or an anything. It's just when you let just attention at all costs run wild, you end up with – so we'll have whatever a fight version of a Kardashian is eventually. CM Punk is that to a certain degree, but that's another thing. And I understand that guy's excitement to fight. But still – I mean, he's a star, so let's just put him in the UFC. That's what a Kardashian is.
Yeah, that's
and
weird.
If all of a sudden there's some guy who comes along who can't fight for shit, but he can get everybody excited, he speaks like Conor McGregor.
We don't want that.
We don't want that.
We don't want
that. And the more of that that's successful, the more we will eventually get that. So that's why I didn't like that. But that passion and conflict and stuff, that drives our whole culture. And Diaz fans are passionate. And if they understood that Diaz – doesn't care. I thought I won, but catch him on Tuesday and he's smoking weed with his friends and his brother and stuff.
Smoking weed at the press conference.
Yeah.
Vaping. That's what
good for him. That's another thing quickly. So you have a brother.
Yeah.
I have two brothers.
And we've got to give a shout out to Tim and Dave, big supporters of the show. And it's just it's great to have family support.
And you can honestly say you love your brother, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
These two brothers show you how to love your brother.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
You want to learn stuff from all these guys. Conor McGregor has a growth mindset. I hate him. Well, who cares if you hate him? Learn about growth from him. You want to learn something? Oh, I don't cheer for the Diaz. That's how you love your brother. Watch Nathan Diaz talk about his brother. Watch them together.
Nick Diaz is the best fighter in the
world.
Exactly. Welcome back to Five Rounds today. Robin and I are talking about UFC 202, and I've got the underground going on here. And just you look at some of the thread things that are going on here, and I thought MMA fans were different, but I guess not. It says one of the thread titles is Conor's dick pops out during the fight.
How many people responded to that? How many pages of responses have been sent?
Right now, I only see a couple of pages.
Okay, that's good. That's a good sign. I love Keurig. I admire Keurig as somebody who's had a huge – like when you think about – there are so many things that will never be remembered in our busy culture. The Underground and a few other key Sure Dogs, these guys literally was part of what kept the Fanatics
100%.
Being Fanatic in the dark times.
Yeah.
So whatever they become, they will always have that and they always should have that. We're sitting here and anybody else that's watching fighting, these guys were – and they – but most of these guys will never get the credit they deserve. Most of the early pioneer fighters, the tap-out guys, the UG – Sure Dog, all these things that people forget. History is not something people hang on to all that heavily.
It's
so I love Keurig forever. Yeah. I met him before I ever fought, and he was very, very good to me. He was like – at the time I was like, well, you know, when I fight, I want to fight Mark Hominick. I had a blue belt. I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
And it's like – he's like, look, you'll get killed. Right? And he's right. I mean, I sparred with Mark – before my first fight, and he murdered me. He dropped me with body shots, and I would like be almost crying, and he'd be like, "Get up,
walking off."
No, just get up, because that's what Sean said to him. Get up. Get up. You can't stay down. Get up. It's like all these enzymes are shooting. My liver is in trauma. So, yeah, obviously that was a terrible idea. But I didn't know. You don't know, which is – we're not going to talk about CM Punk much. I'm sure we will coming in. But when he said, well, yeah, I'll do this, he had no idea how little you can learn in the time. So he might be like, well, I think he said, one day I'll be a UFC champion. How about that? Now, I think he was trolling. But anyways – so Kirik said, don't do that. What you should do, if it's for TV, is find some crazy karate guy and get him in a gi with a black belt and get him with a stack of, like, cement blocks and light him on fire and have him smash him and then have people go, oh, he's going to fight that guy, and then just submit him. I was like, that's a really good idea, which I basically did, and I still lost.
Yeah,
because the guy I fought wasn't all that particularly good, and I still lost in the second round. But I wasn't that good of a fighter. Yeah. Because no matter how dedicated to it, you can only get so good. But anyways, my point with the Underground – with a lot of these, and is there will be a certain amount of people that are nincompoops.
Yeah.
And some of them will drive
away.
Seems
like a lot of them, though.
Yeah, I know. You know, and it doesn't matter where you go. There's negativity is kind of a thing that breeds itself. And if you can either get drawn into it and go, F you, you douchebag, or sometimes just back away. And that's what people eventually do. There's a certain amount on those places, and there were such brilliant communities in some of these, and I'm sure there still are to some degree. But these are people who will react to anything. I wrote a tweet one morning, and there are people who still mention it.
Wow.
Yeah, like at 9 o'clock in the morning, somebody tweeted me. I had no idea what it was. I'm like, I don't know. I don't care about any stuff like that. And hundreds of people sent me a message. And people will still send me a link, oh, these guys are talking about it. It's like, who on earth could think that somebody is defined by their best tweet or their worst tweet in a world where you have 10,000 thoughts and you have one crazy one or one good one? But that's what this kind of thing breeds. It breeds this. If somebody doesn't like something or does like something, a lot of people hate it. But if you don't like it, I don't like it either. Or you get mad back. Well, how can you say that? And that's kind of what's happening with Connor and Nate. This incredible brilliance happens. Something that we can learn from in millions of ways and be inspired by in millions of ways. And here we are Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And on the web, people are still arguing about it. Yeah. And I mean, passion's good.
Yeah, passion is good.
Passion's good. But you know, arguing, getting angry at each other.
Yeah. And people, I think sometimes, I think they need that, though. They need to be emotionally invested in things. And they need to be, okay, I'm on this team and I'm staying on this team. Because this has been my team forever, and I'm not changing. Even if their philosophy changes, I'm still sticking with my team. Because, you know, I'm sure you've met a lot of people where, hey, the Leafs or the Bruins or the Cubs, that's their team, and that's their team for life. Whether they suck or whether they're the champions, they're staying on board, staying on the specific side. Now,
this is a weird thought, but we will really celebrate loyalty. But will we even celebrate it when the loyalty ruins you? So, and it's brought up many times about Rhonda's coach.
Yeah.
That maybe there's other coaches that may be better, and there's maybe evidence to support this idea.
Yeah.
I'm loyal. I'm loyal no matter what. Now, will we celebrate when loyalty is misguided or it's just there for a natural instinct? It's just a default. I'm loyal no matter what. What if that person raped somebody?
Yeah.
Murdered somebody?
Yeah.
Are we still loyal? When is it okay to not do that? It's a real interesting philosophical question. It applies to fighters and coaches, and it applies to being a fan or a fanatic. Do you jump off the train when Ronda loses, or do you jump off the train when John Jones gets in a car accident? Mm-hmm. Or when is it okay? And is it okay if you get new information to change your mind? I think one of our societal problems is we don't, no matter what information we're given, we stick with, no, that's not true, and then you try to find something to, even though it could be real truth.
Yeah.
And if it's, somebody's like, well, it's science, it's like all of the history of the highest educated people researching, trying to disprove it. It's like, okay, well, I'll try to undermine science then. Science itself. Let's just do, maybe that'll work. And you just defend your spot forever. And maybe that's okay. But maybe it's worth thinking about it and considering that it's good to have new information change your thinking.
Well, I think we got new information on Saturday night in the co-main event. Maybe we didn't get any new information. I guess we still know that Anthony Rumble Johnson is a bad motherfucker.
Yeah.
And but I guess the new information is I honestly believe this is the guy that with the performance that we've seen over the – okay, yes, he lost to Daniel Cormier. And I have a feeling that if they fight again – that it won't look the same as that. Now, I'm not saying that Anthony Johnson's going to win, but you get a sense that if anybody's going to beat DC, because he is clearly, right now with John Jones out of the picture, they're the two guys, 100%. Yeah. Yes, people say Gustafson's around there, but we saw what Anthony Johnson did to Gustafson, and I get a sense that he might do that to him again.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at Anthony Johnson and his evolution, because I say evolution, but it's very Anthony Johnson. You don't see him doing anything other than what we've seen him do. Stalking his opponents, setting traps, getting the knockout with his hands or with his feet. Yeah. That's his game. How do you feel that he would match up with the best John Jones that we've seen, the best version of Anthony Johnson?
The assignment would have to be for Jones to, you know, Jones is great at using his length. He's got a big reach advantage, you know, and
he stays
out. Yeah, he stays out in the range four and keeps you at, you know, obviously that's logic. That makes sense. I mean, what if I can make you not get to me? That would be great. But that assignment is so hard. It can be done. We can do it.
Lorenzo Larkin and Neil Magny.
Yeah. Oh, that was cool. Yeah, that was really cool. Man, those kicks. Like, he's so – somewhere along the line, probably against that good, talented Russian.
Tumanov.
He was like, oh, wait, my kicks are worse than everybody else's. I think I'm going to use them a lot. It makes sense. Also, that guy's super rangy.
Yeah.
My leg might be as long as his arm. Let's give that a go. There's some simple logic to some of this stuff. But yeah, Larkin is a good example. But on the other hand – so Diaz, people are like, oh, he's got to use the jab. Okay, well, there's a lot of – it's no longer one weapon. Let's make sure one weapon. Yeah. There's so many variables and so many layers of things. But and so I was like, well, McGregor's got to stay outside. And somebody's like, you can't stay outside against the longer fighter. Well, where are you going to go? Mm-hmm. Because to get inside, you must go from outside. And so in theory – if I can do it one time, then I'm inside. But when I'm inside, Diaz is very vicious inside the tight ranges, and he can get a hold of me. What's a really hard assignment? I was talking to Jack Slack about this 2 years ago. The idea, when you're on the outside of my range, and you have the shorter range, literally every single – if you're going to do that, every single entry, you have to make me miss, enter, hit me, and make me miss on the way out.
Yeah.
All night long. That's insane.
Welcome back to Five Rounds today. Ramdeen and Black talking about UFC 202. I promise we're going to talk about Damian Maia and Carlos Condit, but Anthony Johnson stopping Glover Teixeira, proving to be the number one contender, especially with John Jones out of the picture. This guy, very, very evolved. He seems more evolved in the stand-up realm than anybody else in the division, because it seems like it's a perfect combination of speed, power, mobility, movement, finesse, creativity. It seems to be, and it's very difficult to take the guy down because he is in control of all of that.
Yeah, yeah. They built him around his strengths and then built it out. Okay, well, we can do this. If you hit somebody in balance, they're out. Cool. Let's put you in a position to do that. Cool. Let's put you in a position to do that and not get taken down. Cool. And you just built him out from there.
Yeah.
But the biggest disservice that people – oh, you were saying, do we get any new information?
Yeah.
With science, you have taken all the information forever and you've tested it and retested it with educated people. And then my job as another scientist is to try to disprove it.
Yeah.
We do that over and over and over and over and over in science. Seek intentionally to disprove it, prove something wrong. Glover was trying to do that, but he couldn't – disprove it this time. The only guy who's disproven it in years was
DC.
And part of it's crazy, but part of disproving it was just surviving the thing that he does.
Yeah.
And if that thing lands slightly different, or his foot is on the ground slightly different, or DC pauses for a moment before any of a thousand variables, he's out. Anthony Johnson is the champion of the world. I mean, so you have to have – if that's going to happen again, and it's happened to every single other guy, so we assume it's going to happen again, you have to be ready to not get knocked out. To which, interestingly, DC said after it, he's like, some of that is a mindset. I believe in the power of the mind as much or more than the next guy, but I'm not 100% sure about that because there's a physiological response to the coup contra coup injury that shuts your brain off.
Yeah.
So it's cool though. DC has become one of my very favorite fighters, the way he puts it all together.
Love him.
Tough
as nails.
But I still think AJ versus John Jones is the fight.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I need to see the rematch with DC. I need to see a fight with John Jones. And
John Jones, New York. All of a sudden, he's only suspended for 6 months. New York, it's happening. Trust me. I'll bet on it.
Oh, that would be so amazing. Okay, we got to switch focus. August 27th, UFC on Fox 21 goes down in Vancouver at the Rogers Arena. The main event, Carlos Condit and Damian Maia. Must-see TV, Anthony Pettis, Charles Oliveira, as we talked about off the top of the show, our guy Chad Laprise on the card, Shane Campbell on the card. It is the UFC debut of Alex Ricci, Sam Alvey. Man, lots of great fights. Carlos Condit, Damian Maia, what is happening? Is it just because when you look at the body of work of Carlos Condit as a whole, this is a guy that goes after the kill. But as you pointed out in his fight with Nick Diaz, it's like, okay, I don't know if I'm going to be able to kill this guy, but I want that title, and I have to play smart, intelligent, strategic game to get the job done. With this fight with Damian Maia, is it going to be the same thing, or is Carlos Condit's nature, is it in his nature, is his default to look to try to take you out?
Who's the last guy to beat Maia? Is it Rory?
I think it was probably
It was Rory. Yeah. And if we use that as a prototype, we're going to get in trouble, and we got to survive it, and we got to be in better shape. And once he slows down, it's going to be harder for him to take us down, and then that's the game plan. That's scary. If we go the other way, so Maia wins by rear naked choke.
Yeah.
Just won it, tapped out, fell asleep, whatever. How does that happen? First, he's got to get on the back, so we have to stop him somewhere along that chain. To do that, he's got to be on top of you on the ground or in tight on you. We have to stop him. He's got to go from outside to inside without you knocking him out, so we have to stop that. We reverse engineer it back from that worst result, and we all the way back, and these are all our chances to stop Damian Maia from submitting us. We work backwards from the worst-case scenario, and there is – I think it's called a pre-mortem. I think that's what that's called in business. You look at whatever the worst case scenario is and you work your way back and find all the places we can prevent
it.
I think that's how you fight Damian Maia. At least one aspect. It's not how you fight him, but it's one aspect that you can look at with a guy with a very direct line. Damian Maia, Josh Barnett, Gunnar Nelson, they have a route to get that they're going to. We need to stop that route pre-mortem from the worst case scenario and work our way back and find all the ways to stop it. The best way is the first way. He can't get to me.
Yeah.
He can't get to me at all. I'm slicing him up from the outside. So that we're going to definitely make the plan. If everything goes according to plan, we slice him up from the outside. He can't even get to us. Oh, wait, he can get to us. Okay, well, when he does, we need to handle that situation. And so on and so on and so on so that we don't end up more.
Okay, we're going to take a break. And we're going to the final segment here as we talk about UFC's return. Thank you. Welcome back to Five Rounds. Today we're talking about UFC on Fox, which goes down August 27th at the Rogers Arena in Vancouver. Damian Maia, Carlos Condit. And before the break, I was saying if a fighter doesn't have the faith in their coach, and I'm just saying, let's say you're Carlos Condit, and we talked about the fact that he is going to have top-notch coaches. But if you're a Joe Blow and you've got Damian Maia and your jiu-jitsu coach got his black belt from wherever, are you objective and are you honest? Say, look, you're just not qualified to get me ready for what Damian Maia is going to bring to the table because Damian Maia is a decorated jiu-jitsu guy. Now, I know this is not jiu-jitsu. Yeah. It's mixed martial arts, so not all the same things apply, but
no. Nope. I'll tell you why. Because, and let's take it. Let's use Ronda Rousey before when she was unstoppable.
Yeah.
Let's use that Ronda Rousey as an example. We're fighting Ronda Rousey, and we find that out. We have 8 weeks. Doesn't matter what jiu-jitsu coach I have. Yeah. She's
steps.
A decade too far along. We still will do worst case scenario drills. So I'm in an armbar. What do? We're going to do that. But that's not going to be what wins
our focus.
It for us. We're going to do drills about the moments in time where she goes in for her throw. We're going to
deal. Just don't get there.
Yes, we're going to deal with that. Holly dealt with that, but she'd probably been training for that for
years,
their coaches understood she had the ability to do that. We're going to deal with that. If she gets to this throw, how do we deal with it? Well, we might develop three or four sensitivity and three or four options, but she's got nine, so she'll probably get us. We can't tell our fighter that, but
yeah,
we know
right.
It's sort of true. So then we have to stop her from coming in. It's that same thing, and it's fighters with a specific route. We will accept the reality of the possibility that we're in these places, and we'll work on those situations, but it doesn't matter what coach you have now. I saw somebody, unfortunately I forget, but they brought in Sheila Bird, who is a high-level black belt and very, very classically good at arm bars and a number of the Ronda things, and somebody brought
Sarah
her
Kaufman,
in.
I think.
Sarah, I think,
yeah,
brought
I think it was Sarah Kaufman,
right.
Yeah.
Sarah did bring her in, that's right. And brought her in for Ronda, and she got arm locked.
Yeah.
And Sarah is a brilliant fighter. She's not signed by the UFC. That's a crime.
That is a crime.
It's a crime.
Especially when the show's going down in Vancouver.
Yeah,
she should be on this card. It makes no sense.
Of course she should.
Very, very strange stuff. But also Anthony Pettis dropping down to 145 pounds to take on Charles Oliveira. What do you expect? We're running out of time, but what do you expect from Pettis' featherweight debut?
I think that Oliveira doesn't have the heavy ability to grapple. Pettis is going to be bigger and stronger. I think Pettis will be moving around and slicing him up a little bit. But who knows, man? Oliveira, there's some cagey submissions. And he doesn't need you on the ground necessarily. He's worked a number of them from you vertical. So it's going to be cool.
Also, a ton of action. Paige VanZant, as I pointed out, a bunch of Canadians on the card as well. That is it for us. Next week, we're going to focus on the heavyweight tilt that will go down, if you're in Canada, live right here on FN. Josh Barnett and Andre Arlovsky, the two former UFC heavyweight champions. On behalf of Robin Black, our man A-Rap, we want to thank you so much for tuning in. I'm John Ramney, and we'll see you guys next time on Five Rounds Today.